In our first hour, we're going to talk about teen protesting. I don't know if you want to call it that. We've got a really great panel we put together. So I kind of wanted to build it around Ben Russell, who's in the studio, Naperville Central Senior, who is organizing Walkout for Gun Control at Naperville Central. April 20th, and you added another day?
April 20th and also March 14th, which is just this Wednesday.
Just this Wednesday, good. And we also have Ed Yonka, director in studio, director of communication and public policy for the ACLU of Illinois. Thanks for joining us quickly.
Thank you. Thank you, Dave. Good to be here.
And on the phone, Dawson Barrett. Dawson, are you there?
I am here.
So a summer ago, I was out in Portland, and we took our camper van out there, and they brought some books to the camper van, Microcosm Publishing, and they brought Teenage Rebels, Successful High School Activists from the Little Rock Nine to the Class of Tomorrow. This is a wonderful book. I want to share it with Ben when we're done, but I'd like to start off with Ben, and you guys can chip in. So, Ben, how'd you get the idea of this, and how'd you get the ball running?
I mean, I can't take credit for this idea at all. You know, it was kind of a national thing that's come about. After the Parkland shooting, there was just kind of this energy that the time was up for this kind of thing. And I saw on Twitter and a lot of other places that there was this national walkout being planned for April 20th. You know, 10 a.m., students get up, they walk out, they protest this, you know, silence on gun control. And I figured, you know, with such a big school, it was just we needed somebody to organize it, you know, and I'm not doing it alone. Absolutely. I've got a team of great people, you know, four other people that are really helping me out. And we're just trying to get it organized so that the students know what's happening and what we're fighting for.
Now, for people, maybe Dawson doesn't know the Naperville area. So people who are listening, talk about how big the school is, how big Naperville is. Give a little demographic.
Naperville's huge. We've got 3,000 at our school and five other schools in the town. So, you know, it really adds up. And it's, you know, a very nice town. It's very safe and all that. But, you know, these things happen everywhere. So even in this district, it's important.
And you told me on the phone the other day, how many high schools are there in the district? I mean, there's North, I know.
There's two in the district for the high schools, but there's five in the town.
And they're all participating?
As far as I know, they're all participating. I have vague ideas of the other district, but I know that both Central and North are participating, and I'm pretty sure that both other high schools, Nequa and Waubonsie, are also participating.
Ed and Dawson, I mean, what are you hearing across the country? This is happening everywhere?
It's happening everywhere. I think what you're really seeing is, you know, people like Ben and his colleagues in Naperville and then all across the country who really see this as kind of an incredible moment, really unique in terms of wanting to speak up and speak out. And they're organizing themselves. I think they're using all the tools that they have at their disposal these days in terms of social media and other communications devices. Dave, you and I could have never organized anything like this. And the reality is that it's really, you know, come together in something that's creating a national voice.
In your book, Dawson, can you talk a little bit about how the tools have evolved over the years? I mean, I know with Ben, I mean, social media is a big deal. That's how I got a hold of you through Twitter.
Yeah.
But Dawson, how has the word gotten out over the years?
Well, you know, that's interesting because, you know, those tools have changed. But in many ways, the tactics have been very similar for 100 years. You know, when you think about protesters, you know, civil disobedience might imply, you know, you have a sit-in, right? You sit where you're not supposed to sit, or you have a stand-in where you're not supposed to stand. But since students are supposed to sit in class, they walk out. And they've been doing that since the 1910s, the 1920s, the 1930s. I mean, the reality is that this is a normal part of U.S. history, is young people walking out. So, I mean, this is a really honored tradition, actually.
And Ben, what type of support are you getting, or lack of support in the community with teachers, with administration? We were talking a little bit about that in the green room, but
I mean, the school is giving us as much of a green light as they possibly can. You know, their job is to keep us safe, and by walking out, you know, even though I feel like we're on the same side as the school, you know, this is not a middle finger to the teachers or anything like that. You know, we want to keep them safe as well, but you know, they can't say, oh, yeah, please walk out of our school at this time when we're supposed to be keeping you in class. But overall, they've been, yes, you know, we'll we'll figure out the details, but yes, you can go out. But, you know, there's always going to be a lack of support in these type of things that are so politicized and things like that. It's not 100% everybody wants gun control. So we've seen, you know, some backlash from students and adults and things like that who don't believe that this is the way to go or the solution or a way even to get to this solution.
When you say walk out, how long? Tell us how long you will be walking out and if there's a time limit and all that type of stuff.
So for March 14th, we're going to be walking out for 17 minutes. Students walk out at 10 a.m. and then return to class after 10:17. Those 17 minutes are for the 17 killed in the Parkland shooting. It's, you know, it's both kind of a recognizing of their loss and also to kind of start the conversation. And then April 20th, it'll be a walkout at the same time, 10 a.m., but it's going to be kind of an all-day type thing where we bring in people and we kind of make our voice more known, but it's more of also a general type thing. It's just, here we are, we're standing up for gun control, this is us, you can't ignore us anymore.
And are you networking with other organizers at other schools? I mean, do you talk to people?
We have slightly. It gets a little fuzzy because there's just so many details and things like that. And, you know, to coordinate two schools together, even the larger the team, you know, that's more students in more places and things like that. So we've been trying to stick to kind of helping organize our school. But if anybody reaches out, we're happy to talk and discuss and help out.
The ACLU, what this letter? Talk about the letter you just actually sent me yesterday.
Yeah.
Who did that go out to and what's that about?
So early last week, we sent a letter out to school officials, administrators, teachers all across the state. And what we really wanted to do is sort of talk about the way in which, you know, these walkouts are part of a great civic experience and experiment. And in fact, they reflect people becoming part of the debate about public policy issues and that should be respected. What we're concerned about is what we've seen in an isolated number of cases where students have been threatened with suspensions or the lack of participation in after school activities or things of that nature simply for engaging in this 17-minute walkout. And so we thought it was important to kind of lay out the way in which we think this is actually an educational thing and one that we ought to value. Secondly, to point out some of the responsibilities that the school has. You know, number one, that you wouldn't punish a student additionally because this is a political statement as opposed to just being absent for some other reason, that, you know, that you would provide some historical context for what this is. I mean, I think, you know, placing this in that history that, you know, is in the book, I think, you know, giving people opportunities to voice their views, as Ben was talking about, whether or not people agree with them, with Ben's position or not, giving people an ample opportunity to be heard or to speak out, and then really, you know, sort of being able to take this and provide those opportunities to talk about it within the context of the school. I think that's what we hope schools will do. I think that's probably what most of them will do in some or whole parts of that. But I think, you know, what we don't want to see is a bunch of students get suspended or, say, leaders of the activity get suspended simply on the basis of having done that.
Well, we've seen, if you know the Chicago suburb area, the schools in Plainfield said that they will suspend kids if you walk out. And
right.
It's just kind of, you know, they're right there. They're neighbors to us, but they're going to have a bigger fight than we do.
And I think, you know, those kinds of examples are the ones that, you know, we're concerned about at the ACLU. I think we are ready to kind of reach out to, you know, those school districts in particular. If you start suspending students or even just the leaders of this for something that you wouldn't suspend them for, you know, if they were walking out for, you know, a doctor's appointment or a family event or a religious holiday or whatever, you know, those are the kinds of things where you're really punishing a student for speaking out on public policy, number one. And number two, of course, you're really missing this opportunity to have this larger discussion.
Ben, at the end game.
Yeah, if I could go
ahead. Yeah, go ahead, Dawson. Yeah.
Oh, just to, you know, to jump in here, you know, again, there's this long history of students walking out. You know, there's a student walkout in 1951 that ended up becoming a part of the Brown v. Board of Education decision. So, you know, obviously I think it's great what the ACLU is doing and trying to kind of lend their strength to these students. But realistically, I think that the administrators who are threatening to expel and suspend and give detention, I think they're going to find that they're on the wrong side of history.
Yeah, we're going to, after the commercial break, I got some events I want to bring out from your book there, Dawson. Okay. Dawson, what's the end game, or what's the end game for this? What do you hope to accomplish?
I mean, these walkouts are not going to be the end of it, of course. A movement doesn't take 2 months. But basically, what we want to say is that this is the next generation of voters. We're coming out. We're showing our voice. We are the majority. We're not going to let these things control Congress anymore, all this money, that type of thing. You know, it's... We will vote you out if you do not, you know, start taking these stances that align with what the population wants. And, it's just hoping to get there, you know, starting with these walkouts, but it's a process. It's a continued movement. It's going to be interesting to see what happens a couple months from now, because so many times before when an act of gun violence occurs, the conversation just dies out like that because people say, yeah. Hey, it's not time to talk about guns. And then by the time, you know, you can't argue that anymore, we're not talking about it anymore. They've done their job. And so that's why this time feels different. It feels like, hey, we're still talking about it here so many weeks later. So.
And I think having that voice as opposed to the cynicism we often hear is the thing that is so important.
We got to take a break here. We'll come back with our panelists on this issue after this on WGN.
Well, maybe I belong in New York, sipping drinks, Frank Sinatra, maybe dancing the night away with Marilyn Monroe before she goes off to D.C. to John Kennedy. Or maybe I belong California, where I can bum cigarette from James Dean, the prime queen, rebel without a cause. Maybe I can ride with the dead, singing Viva with Jerry Garcia. All that I know is wherever I go, yeah, wherever wind blows me, yeah, it better not be here. And all that I know is wherever I go, yeah, wherever wind blows me, better not be here. Maybe I belong in Seattle, shooting up with Kurt Cobain. Maybe singing by the Angels with Andy Wood. Maybe I belong in London, tripping through the sky with John Lennon. All that I know is wherever I go, yeah, wherever wind blows me, yeah, it better not be here. All that I know is wherever I go, yeah, wherever wind blows me, yeah, it better not be here. I don't know where I belong, shaking with fear. I don't know where I belong, but I know it isn't here. All that I know is wherever I go, yeah, wherever wind blows me, yeah, it better not be here. And all that I know is wherever I go, yeah, wherever wind blows me, better not be here.
Ben Russell, Naperville Central High School senior and singer-songwriter. Tell us about that song.
That song is called Sinatra. That is the first time I've ever performed it acoustically. It's usually an electric song. But in a group called Ethel Shank. It stands out on bills. It's a little nice.
Ethel Shank?
Yeah.
I went out with her in Naperville. She's still around? I'm just kidding. What does that mean? Ethel Shank.
A friend just was brainstorming ideas, and just on the list that came out, you know, we looked at it, hey, that'll stand out to people. People will remember that name. So that's just kind of what we've been using.
And on our panel, we also have Ed Yonkoff, Director of Communication and Public Policy for the ACLU of Illinois. And are you in D.C., Dawson? Dawson Barrett?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. Are you in D.C.?
Yeah, I am. I'm in Corpus Christi, Texas.
Oh, you're in Corpus Christi, Texas now. So tell us, we're going to keep you on over the news break, but I was telling them, tell us how this book came about. I mean, you wrote it, well, it was published in 2015. So how did Teenage Rebels come about?
Well, I'm a college professor. I teach at a community college down here. And there's a big dual enrollment program, which is teaching college courses to high school students. So basically, I found myself around high school students, and I was trying to make my course is more relevant, and I started digging up these stories, and it turns out there are just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them. So I was shocked, so I decided to write them down, and Joe from Microcosm said, hey, we should get this out to as many young people as we can, and so that's what we've been doing.
I picked out some local. I'm going to give this to Ben when the show's over. 1969, A Funeral for Education, Waukegan Township High School. Waukegan, Illinois. You know that, Ed?
I know that one.
Well, tell us about a little bit about that. Go ahead.
I was going to let Dawson.
Yeah, go ahead. Real quick, we got a break for the news. But Dawson, what do you know about the Funeral for Education?
well, you're jogging my memory. I mean, you know, it's been several years since I wrote this one. I do know that there was a vigil, a candlelight vigil that the students did.
More than 500 students, yeah.
Yeah, these are big. And, you know, many of these are largely forgotten from history. You know, they're not famous events. So, you know, part of it is to bring them back to life and remind people that this has been the norm.
Yeah, even as a student from Naperville, I hadn't heard of that one, but it sounds impressive and, you know, very important.
Yeah, here we go.
It's one of the first ones around here where students actually came together to talk about education funding and process, and that was really what marked it as being important at the time.
Here's from Dawson's book. In yet another blow to public education, voters in Waukegan, Illinois rejected a referendum to raise taxes for schools in the fall of 1969. School district administrators announced in response that the resulting budget cuts would likely force them to eliminate extracurricular activities. And then that led to the walkout on October 28th. I want to talk about your career as a punk rocker, too. So don't go away, Dawson. We're going to take a break with David Jennings and the news, and we'll be back on WGN.
Come gather around, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters above you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you'd better stop swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they're changing.
Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN, and we're talking about the walkouts for gun control coming along this spring. And in the studio, we have Ben Russell, who's organizing the Naperville Central walkout. There's two of them now.
Yes.
Give them the dates again. For
March 14th, which is this Wednesday, and April 20th.
Our friend Ed Yonkoff from the ACLU. We have Dawson Barrett on the phone, who wrote Teenage Rebels, successful high school activist from the Little Rock Nine to the Class of Tomorrow. And joining us also, he's in D.C., I bet, Joe Beal, the publisher and founder of Microsoft. Microcosm, yeah. There's a lot of people for me to handle. How you doing, Joe?
Doing great, thank you.
Okay, thanks for joining us. Before the break, we were getting into, I want to get a little bit into the punk rock ethic, because I know you guys both have a background in that. So, Dawson, talk about your punk rock background and how that informed your political points of view.
Yeah, sure. I actually grew up in Peoria.
So, oh, I didn't know that.
Not too far from you, yeah. And, you know, as a high schooler, Peoria felt like a place that where nothing ever happened. And maybe as a result of that, we had a really vibrant punk rock scene. But we didn't have a venue, so we always had to put on our own shows. We had to rent out, you know, American Legion halls and had to get someone with a PA and make all the flyers ourselves. And so, you know, having to do it yourself was, you know, really empowering, and it taught skills that, you know, I continued to use in activism and now as a teacher. So I guess I feel like I'm very much a product of DIY punk.
Did you listen to stuff like, I mean, I'm probably, did you listen to stuff like The Clash and stuff? Did they inform you, or other, what type of stuff did you listen to?
Well, I mean, yeah, I love The Clash. That was, you know, way before my time, you know. I graduated high school in 2000. So probably a bunch of bands you've never heard of. The big band out of Peoria was a band called Planes Mistaken for Stars.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And Joe, same question.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We had, I grew up in Cleveland, and we did have, you know, our own club called Speaking Tongues, which was started by kids that were some years older than me, you know, and it really felt like, you know, the teenagers had inherited the earth when, you know, when I came up into it. And, you know, in the early 90s, you know, we could kind of do whatever we wanted. And yeah, and I think very much so, like, that taught me, like, a sense of morality and purpose. And, you know, it really kind of directed my meaning. And then it was by 1996, you know, I really felt like I wanted to sort of create the, like, you know, punk rock arm of publishing. And so that's what I did.
And how'd you do that?
Well, you know, I initially felt like the people around me were really smart writers and artists and, like, you know, had really maybe interesting political ideas. And so initially I had, I set up zines that they had written and put them on the bar, you know, at our club, and I sold them that way. And then I created a mail order catalog. And then I, you know, I just started writing to people that whose work I thought, you know, could benefit from a wider audience, you know, which is, you know, sort of laughable when what I'm offering them is fairly marginal at that time. But, you know, I guess that's the thing, though, is, like, when you're young, you both have nothing to lose. And I was just, you know, I was a pompous kid, so it was really the only time I would have done something that brazen.
And how old are you now?
I'm 40.
40. And Dawson, how did you guys find each other for to publish Teenage Rebels?
Well, I actually used to live in Portland and, you know, had kind of crossed paths with Microcosm over the years and, you know, bought their books. And then, you know, I went to graduate school and wrote my dissertation. I've been trying to put that into a book. And I contacted Joe and said, hey, you know, what are the self-publishing options these days? And he said, well, you know, maybe not that book, but maybe we should talk about something else. And so we did, and then that became Teenage Rebels, and then now my other book is coming out as well. So, I don't know, I guess we just kind of clicked.
Sin sent me some of the, I think these are upcoming titles, Joe. We have, just to give the listeners an idea of the imprint you have Feminist Weed Farmer, a Guide to Growing Mindful Medicine in Your Own Backyard by Madrone Stewart, right?
Yep, that's coming up.
And you have Bicycle/Race, Transportation, Culture, and Resistance by Adonia Lugo, PhD. What's that about?
Sure. So Adonia is a doctor of sociology anthropology. And, you know, she's sort of the preeminent voice on, like, the intersection of racism and transportation. And so it's sort of all of her observations of how advocacy and, you know, people that really believe in bicycling are, you know, sort of at a crossroads, you know, for putting those movements together. And, you know, and it's really a neat and different kind of book. And that's kind of exactly why Microcosm exists, is for things like that.
And your bio says, I missed you when we were out in Portland a couple summers ago, but a self-made, actually autistic publisher and filmmaker who draws origins, inspiration, and methods from punk rock. So tell me about your background growing up.
Sure. So, that's the crux of it is, like, I would be what you would consider, like, an at-risk teenager. I was raised on Social Security. My dad was, you know, severely disabled from the time I was about 6 years old. And, you know, our household was really like an unsafe place. And so I sort of, you know, rode my bike around and like began meeting people. And it was really punk rock that gave me a sense of like how to be in the world. And, you know, in the 80s, the understanding of autism was really marginal. So I think I was really just kind of perceived as like a stubborn, difficult, you know, person who was intelligent, but just uncooperative. And so there wasn't really a good place for me to, you know, become educated. But in punk rock, I was really accepted because everybody was weird and, you know, even as a teenager, you know, my like bold, big ideas, you know, weren't seen as ridiculous even as they were. They were kind of embraced and I was championed and, you know, I was around older kids that were, you know, encouraging and you know, and saw the potential in like the ideas that I was, you know, talking about and then later actualizing.
That's really well put. Thanks for sharing that. The rest of the panel, Ben, what do you think about what you just heard?
I mean, the publishing sounds very punk rock as the adjectives come around, you know, describing things that way. And I just feel like that's, you know, amazing that something can be so diverse but also focused on all these political issues, and it's really incredible what you've done. So thank you for all this, I guess.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I just think it's amazing about the idea of finding your place, and whether it's punk rock or, you know, whether it's music of some other kind or skateboarding or whatever it is, I think it's amazing just having that, you know, kind of nurturing environment around you, as you say, to explore ideas. I think that's something we don't tell kids. It's safe to take risks and fail. And I think that's the thing that, for me, is it really kind of resonates through that.
Well, what I'm hearing from everybody here tonight is that the spirit of the DIY things you're doing in the DIY world, all you guys are kind of doing that.
I mean, yeah,
Ben, you're doing that with this walkout.
Music, right? And the walkouts, kind of in this do-it-yourself type way. You know, I've plenty of experience with the punk rock scene here in Chicago, you know, smaller venues, people renting out their basements, doing that type of thing. And, you know, just, I mean, you use the same tactics for these political movements and stuff like that. You do it yourself, you set it up, you find a way.
Yeah.
The one thing I would just say is I think what really comes off is important here, just in talking about the walkouts, then, is to let it be student led. I think that's one thing for many of us that we've really had to learn, whether it's about policing in Chicago or whether it's, you know, kids walking out in the suburbs, is thinking about stepping back and letting young people really take this movement and take it where it's going to go, because that's where the future of it actually is going to be.
You guys wanted to add, I heard somebody, you guys want to add something on that?
Oh, I just wanted to say that, you know, DIY, do it yourself, is sort of a misnomer, because what's so important about it is it's doing things together with other people.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. But you got to start. I guess you got to start somewhere.
It starts with one.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
DIY rolls off the tongue.
Yeah.
Doing it together, I don't know. That doesn't really quite work in the same way. Yeah.
Doesn't sound quite as punk rock.
Yeah. Have you guys heard of mentor programs? I mean, in Naperville, is there anybody from like the 60s? And are there any activists, older activists, any of you guys have talked to? Or are you just doing this?
Not that I can think of. Yeah. I mean, it was just, you know, there's the national people who, you know, they're probably, you know, doing it themselves. And they just said, hey, we're going to have this. We're going to try and spread it as fast as possible. Kids picked up on it. Do it for yourselves. And that's kind of where we're at, you know, just picking it up off, social media and things like that spread like wildfire.
That's exactly it. I was going to say, where you really see it, Dave, is where it's being shared from like one student to another on social media. You know, we talked about the Plainfield situation earlier. You know, I've heard from some of those kids out there, you know, they just picked this up and did it because they had the same feelings that Ben were saying. It's really incredibly powerful just in terms of the way that it's been so youth driven.
We got to take a break, but I want to ask you, do you know anybody with guns out there in Naperville?
I know that plenty of people have guns. You know, there's plenty of that going around. I hope most of them are safe, stable gun owners, which is exactly how we want it to be, but you never know.
Okay. We got to take a break. I will be back after this on WGN. Here we are. Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal. I want to get out of the way and let our panelists talk. Joe Beal, you still there?
Yep,
in
I'm
DC?
Here.
Are you still in D.C.?
I am.
Did you sell? I saw on one of the emails that you sold a copy of Teenage Rebels to tell me that story. Go ahead.
Yeah, that was an amazing moment. So I'm at the National Bike Summit here. And a woman comes up and she says that she is friends with Jackie Corin's mom, and that
Jackie Corin is
she's one of the Never Again Four, one of the activists from Parkland, Florida, who have organized the teenagers who organized the movement to end, you know, mass shootings, and are, you know, having more fanfare than any adult. As well as more success, and you know, and so she kind of picks up this book, Teenage Rebels, and she's like, you know, I know this girl, and I never really thought much about her, and then I've now watched her like change the conversation around guns in America. Is this a book that, you know, she would appreciate? And I was like, yeah, that's exactly the book for Jackie Corin. Because it's like the people, you know, that's exactly why we made that book, is because, you know, people have been doing what she's doing for the past 200 years. And when I met, or, you know, I guess when I met Dawson for the third or the fourth time, you know, he more or less said something along the lines of, and he can correct me, that the teenagers are one of the most marginalized populations in the United States. And I it took me a minute to really think about it, and then I was like, right, they literally have no rights, you know? Yeah. And, you know, and it's like, and I think about myself, and I was like, I did everything that I did because I had nothing to lose, you know?
Wow.
And then, you know, and he was persuasive, where I was like, a book about teenage activists.
Great.
And then, you know, and I was persuaded. And then, you know, and now I think about them and I get so much inspiration from them every day. Like, I read the news and I, you know, and I really want to know what they're up to and what they're saying, because, you know, like, if we had the answers, we would have solved this problem long ago. Well, and I think we have so much more to learn from, you know, people that are actively changing the conversation than, you know, whereas, like, I see most people, like, most Generation X people my age telling other, you know, younger millennials and younger what they should do rather than listening to them and learning from them.
We got, like, 2 minutes left. Give me the website where people can find the book.
It's microcosm.pub, or if you're old school, you can go to microcosmpublishing.com. Either one of those will lead you right there.
You got one question? You want to have one? Ben's taking notes. Go ahead. Ben has a question.
All right. This one's for Dawson, actually. I was reading up on some interviews about Teenage Rebels, and I saw a quote of yours that really struck me, especially as you being a U.S. history professor. There are serious efforts to rewrite the U.S. history curriculum to downplay inequality and protest, and instead promote empty patriotism and respect for authority. And I just wanted to know where kind of that thought came from and how that really relates to the conversation around gun control today and these walkouts.
Are you there? Well, somebody can take it.
So, you know, there are efforts, Ben, in especially in Texas, which purchases the largest numbers of school books, I think, in the country, to change the history curriculum and vanilla and water down the kind of struggles for equality that have taken place, whether it's the movement for women's history and women's votes to the civil rights history to anti-war protests and et cetera. And I think to rewrite all of this to this kind of, as I think the professor said, to this kind of, you know, patriotic notion that we've always been okay and we're just getting better and everybody, you know, has sort of agreed to all of this and really missing what has been, you know, the very things that you're going through right now in terms of struggling to make change.
Okay, we got to wrap. Is there a website or how can people find out more about what you're doing, Ben?
The easiest way to find out about us and kind of the movement is Twitter's at NCHS Walkout. That's ours specifically. But search up, you know, National Walkouts and you'll find pages and pages.
You're the best. When I leave to go to that new loop station, you can take over Nocturnal Journal. That's good. You're taking notes there and everything. Thank you all. Thanks to Ben Russell, Senior, Naperville Central High School. Say hey to everybody out there for me.
Thank you so much, Dave.
FO and stuff. Thanks, Ed Yonka, Director of Communication and Public Policy for the ACLU of Illinois. Thanks for coming
Dave.
In tonight. Dawson Barrett, you out there? Thank you for joining us. And Joe Beal, thanks for calling in from D.C. Good luck with everybody out there at Portland, too. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Good luck, you guys. Thanks a lot. And we'll be back with more after this on WGN.